Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Upon this rock you shall build my church. Christ's words to St. Peter took on new form some 500 years ago with the laying of the first cornerstone of the St. Peter's Basilica we know today. Stay with me, Tracy McClure, as we look at that historic day, the how and who cares for the monument today, plus a website offering guided tours. Thanks for listening.
Possa la circostanza felice del cinquecentesimo anniversario risvegliare in tutti i cattolici il desiderio di essere pietre vive.
Pope Benedict there inviting the faithful to be the cornerstones of the faith, recalling that in April, some 500 years ago, Pope Julius II laid the first founding stone of the current St. Peter's Basilica.
500 anni or sono precisamente il 18 aprile 1506, il Papa Giulio II poneva la prima pietra della nuova Basilica di San Pietro. Questa splendida basilica che il mondo intero ammira nella possente armonia delle sue forme.
The basilica that you see today did take 120 years, but it's important to know there was a moment of a decision, a moment of a foundation, and the whole laying of that cornerstone that would turn into this magnificent monument.
Elizabeth Lev is professor of Christian art and architecture for Duquesne University's Italian campus. She points out that the basilica tourists and pilgrims see today is not the first to have been built on this very site, and so Pope Julius's plan for a new basilica was shockingly revolutionary for his time.
500 years ago, Pope Julius II took an extraordinary decision, and it was to demolish an 1,100-year-old basilica that had been built by the Emperor Constantine for the Christian community in Rome right after the legalization of Christianity. This church had been around for a millennium, and it had seen the incoronation of Holy Roman emperors, it had seen councils, it had seen popes come and go, it had seen the popes leave to Avignon, it had welcomed their return, and Julius II swept away this 1,100-year-old basilica. He didn't do it with this idea of canceling the old. He did it with the intention to project the church into its future. And the basilica we see today is a church that has been designed from the first stone in 1506 to be the church that would say that would be for the next millennium and the next millennium again.
Ricordare con gratitudine i sommi pontefici che hanno voluto quest'opera straordinaria sulla tomba dell'apostolo Pietro. Ricordo con ammirazione gli artisti che hanno contribuito con il loro genio a edificarla e a decorarla.
Such ingenious architects as Bramante, Michelangelo, Maderno, and Bernini contributed to making St. Peter's the center point of all Christendom, connecting humanity to the heavens.
It's the parish church of the whole world. St. Peter's is the home of St. Peter's grave. It's the place where the Pope says Mass, and as he stands above the grave of St. Peter, it's the reminder that he, the successor of Peter, is the vicar of Christ on earth. It's the church whose doors are open to every single person in the world, and its arms of the square and its huge space inside and that colossal dome are all there to draw us home.
Maintaining that earthly home is a mammoth enterprise. so a special Vatican office was especially set up to care for the basilica and the square, the Fabrica of San Pietro.
St. Peter's Basilica employs an army of what we call the San Pietrini. These are the caretakers of the basilica who not only serve as the custodians up and down the long nave of St. Peter and its aisles, but they also are there for the maintenance of that basilica, and the meticulous care and upkeep of that church goes on every single day. Often early in the morning you can see the San Pietrini out with the engineers checking on a crack or a place where the marble veneer has come off, or watching over the need to restore the piers that are supporting the dome. So St. Peter's really, from everything you see, there are people specialized in taking care of the marble veneers, the mosaics, and then, of course, the huge structural questions of the supporting of the dome, the supporting of the canopy, and all of these other thoughts and concerns. So the people in charge of the care of this basilica, the whole operation that looks after the tremendous amount of maintenance that St. Peter's Basilica requires, the Fabrica of St. Peter's, the Fabrica di San Pietro, the works of St. Peter's, have a very distinctive coat of arms, if you will, which is instead of the two crossed keys that you usually see under the papal tiara, they have two keys that sit side by side, and where you see those on the various thresholds or doorways or different monuments in St. Peter's, you know that they're monuments that were given and are maintained by the Fabrica of St. Peter's. And this is the office that deals with every single aspect of maintaining, taking care of, and running a church that size.
But will Pope Julius's futuristic vision 500 years ago be able to keep pace with the changing times of centuries to come?
I think the church, from its very inception with the new foundation stone, when Julius II took a step that he knew would be unpopular, he was looking towards a great triumphant church of the future, a church where Christians from all over the world, in his mind, would come to this church and be proud of this church, the place that truly would look like the Caput Mundi, the head of the Christian world. And so when he first designed his church, he applied in the construction, his architect, Donato Bramante, who was the brilliant architect of the early Renaissance, Donato Bramante designed a church that was an amalgamation of two of the greatest monuments from antiquity, the Pantheon and the Basilica of Constantine, a public building and a religious building, merged together to be the ultimate reliquary for St. Peter. The treasure that that church houses is one of our greatest treasures of the church. And so, as the church progressed, as the years progressed, the church keeps growing. It has kept growing, and it continues to grow, and it continues to look to the future. From an original Greek cross plan extended into a Latin cross plan to make the church bigger so it could hold the 60,000 people it holds today. From the Latin cross plan to the giant square that holds 175,000 people, added by Bernini in the 1660s, to the Via della Conciliazione that was added under Mussolini in 1929, the church has just continued to expand outwards to welcome more and more people to the church. And I don't know what the future holds for St. Peter's, but I'm certain that the future holds continuing gathering of the people and a continuing beacon for Catholics all over the world.
Elizabeth Lev, professor of Christian art and architecture for Duquesne University's Italian campus. Millions have trod down its nave, and countless have stared into the dizzying heights of its dome. But how many have actually studied St. Peter's Basilica or tried to comprehend this elaborate monument as an achievement that transcends all earthly bounds.
I was actually in the seminary for 4 years, and then after that I spent 2 years working in the missions. That also influenced my decision to do this work, because being in the seminary and in the missions, I felt that I got so much from the church that I needed to give something back. I needed an apostolate, a work for the church.
Later becoming a web and computer expert in the business industry, Alan Howard felt driven by that desire to work for the church and put his personal expertise and his own personal passion for St. Peter's Basilica to the task.
Like many people, I toured St. Peter's Basilica probably 15 to 20 years ago now, and realized I was missing so much because there's so much there. And over the years, I kept coming back to St. Peter's and fell in love with it. And through different guides that I went to the Basilica with, it started to unfold for me, to open up, and I started to get more of the meaning, the significance, the beauty of St. Peter's. And through falling in love with St. Peter's, I decided to go even further and study it. And so I started collecting books and sources, and finding that there weren't a lot of good online sources for St. Peter's, I eventually decided to create a website myself.
After more than 3 years of hard work, Howard created the site www.stpetersbasilica.org, often consulting with Vatican offices and experts to fine-tune details. He's careful to say the nonprofit site is not officially endorsed by the Vatican, but he hopes his chosen apostolate will bring people closer to the faith while piquing their curiosity about one of Christianity's most hallowed shrines.
So many people go through the Basilica now, thousands, even daily, and they're really missing the true meaning of the Basilica, which is the spiritual. It's all there to bring people closer to God. And unfortunately, many people are just going through it and looking at it as a museum, which you can do because the Basilica is so beautiful and the works of art are so precious there. But to go deeper is to find the true meaning, the spiritual significance. The church has always done this in many ways, through music, through art, through all that is good, to kind of bring us into the beauty of the Catholic Church and teach us the significance. I like to kind of close my tours when I give them of St. Peter's Basilica and show them the fantastic dome there of Michelangelo. And look up at those words, tu es Petrus, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. And I tell people, all of this is our answer to those words of Jesus to Peter. And then I tell them, what's going to be our individual response to the words of Jesus?
Howard's own response was to compile hundreds of pages of floor plans, photographs, and facts about the Basilica, citing authoritative texts and Catholic journals.
One thing that many people like to do is go to a floor plan map of the Basilica and just kind of click on the different altars and monuments and just kind of randomly look around the Basilica. They'll also find a map of the grottos and see where John Paul II is buried. They'll be able to go to a map of the square and identify all the different points out in the square, see the place where John Paul II was shot, for example. There's also a number of documents that are there from different sources. So if they want to go deeper, they can read some scholarly books and articles about St. Peter's Basilica.
So is this site more for the pilgrim, or is it even directed towards serious researchers, art historians?
Right. I'm trying to do both, in that the casual pilgrim who has is getting ready to go to St. Peter's or has been there can go to the site and learn a little bit more, go to the next step, and just kind of browse around through St. Peter's. But also, I get email daily from serious scholars who are doing articles on St. Peter's and are starting to use the site as a resource. And I want to make it a resource with the best scholarly information for those serious students of St. Peter's as well.
What are some of the unusual things that people visiting your site might come upon?
They'll see very good photographs of a number of areas, things that they're maybe not able to see or that they missed when they went to St. Peter's, detailed photographs of the monuments, but also some of the stories, which are quite interesting about St. Peter's, the stories of the different architects, the different artists, and the different popes, because we have a lot of papal monuments in there. So it's a real tribute to history to learn more about, you know, each of these popes and their times and what their tomb represents, to kind of get immersed into Catholic history. It's another way of kind of entering into the beauty of the church is to learn more about its history.
Do you, Alan, have any particularly favorite or quirky facts about the Basilica that you'd like to share with people?
Well, you know, there are a lot, really. One of the things that I like to do when I'm talking to people about the Basilica or giving tours myself about the Basilica is to start with the obelisk and to start with the question, why is
the obelisk outside
right,
in the piazza.
Right, the obelisk outside in the square,
right.
My website also covers the area of the square and the colonnades, in addition to the basilica and the grottos and a little bit about the Scavi as well. But I like to start with, why is it all here? What's, you know, the reason for this? And I point to the obelisk and I say, you know, this obelisk was here before St. Peter's, and talk about, you know, the persecutions, the death of St. Peter, and that perhaps this obelisk was the last thing that St. Peter saw. And then after concluding the tour and we come back out, I point again to the obelisk and I say, you know, this obelisk is very ancient, you know. In fact, it goes back to 1,300 years B.C. And we might meditate on who else was alive in 1,300 B.C. in Egypt. And I mentioned, well, Moses was, that's the time frame of Moses in Egypt. You know, consider that, well, perhaps Moses even saw this same obelisk. You know, it's a pious thought. And then get them to thinking, well, who else may have been in Egypt? Perhaps the Holy Family was in Egypt, and it's possible even they saw this obelisk. Now, we have no historical information or tradition of that, but it's a pious thought, and it points to a reality, which is the history of the church, and these articles, these stones, which have come down through the ages and are connected with our faith, and it all brings it back to St. Peter's.
Back in the 16th century, Pope Sixtus V had the 1 million pound Egyptian obelisk moved from another site and erected in the center of St. Peter's Square by Domenico Fontana, who especially invented an ingenious mechanism to get the job done.
In the 1580s, he was quite famous. Fontana actually moves that obelisk from its original location on the side of the basilica to out there in the square. And you can still see a place by the entrance to the Scavi, which is the underground excavations where the obelisk originally set. But originally, that obelisk goes back to the Emperor Caligula, who brought it over in about the year 37 to form the center of his circus, the Circus of Caligula, which then became known as the Circus of Nero. And so it goes back to those times when it was brought over in a huge ship, evidently, the largest built to that time when they brought it over from Egypt. So it's got quite a history of its own.
And just to erect that obelisk there in St. Peter's Square must have required incredible technology, which would have been new for the time as well.
Well, yes, absolutely. There's actually a book just written on that. And Domenico Fontana became quite famous in his time for erecting the obelisk. And it was Sixtus V that had him erect four other obelisks around different sites, and they say that as many as 900 men and 1,000 horses were used out in St. Peter's Square to erect the obelisk. Evidently, 6 months in the planning and 6 months in the actual moving of the obelisk.
Oh my. I seem to recall that around the obelisk there are plaques embedded in the pavement with the various winds, I think, the southern, the western,
right,
the eastern, and northern winds. Is that
yes,
right? And do you know the history of that?
Well, there's actually quite a few of those marking the different compass points, and they're marked as winds. all around the obelisk. The obelisk itself in the 1800s was used as the gnomon of a sundial. So where the shadow of the obelisk hits tells you the solstice markers, and they're in the pavement as well. So there's a lot there just around the obelisk itself. You can see Sixtus symbol there with the lions at the base of the obelisk. We have these markers for the winds, markers for the sundial. There's a lot of history, you know, just right there in the square around the obelisk. And then, of course, the points where all the colonnades line up. You know, this illusion where on each side, the center of the colonnades, Bernini's colonnades, where all the ones in the four colonnades all line up to one column. So there's a lot just right there before you even enter the basilica.
Any other quirky facts that you know, you don't think about when you're just a tourist or a pilgrim going to visit the basilica? The statues that are lining the facade on the top there of the basilica and around the colonnade, what can you tell me about them?
Well, that's, I think, interesting. People come into the colonnade and they see all these statues, and I don't think that they realize that these are 140 great saints of the church lining this colonnade. It's quite a beautiful setting that Bernini created around 1660. One of the things that I've done recently is to photograph each one of those 140 statues, and I'm trying to make a page for each one of those so they can find out what the name of that saint is, and that saint was a real person. And again, what we're trying to do with the basilica is to bring out the spiritual significance. So there's saints represented all throughout the basilica, out there on the colonnade, the apostles up on the top of the facade, the popes inside, and a series of founder saints inside. One of the interesting things about St. Peter's is that there's always work going on at St. Peter's. You know, we see on the facade the date 1612, from Paul V Borghese, when the facade was finished. And we're talking about 500 years since Julius II laid this cornerstone underneath the St. Veronica Pier. But there's always work going on there. There were monuments being put into St. Peter's up into the early 1900s, St. Pius X. There were statues of founders of religious orders being put into St. Peter's up until the 1950s.
And now, as recently with John Paul II, who also, let's say, jump-started that tradition by putting some statues of new saints in
right.
The sides of the basilica.
These are Michelangelo niches, so imagine the honor of having a statue put into a Michelangelo niche on the outside of the basilica. And there's a number of those have been put up recently. Some are only accessible from the Vatican Gardens, but it's a, you know, ongoing work that's happening.
But how do pilgrims keep from getting caught in a tourist trap and being overwhelmed by all of St. Peter's magnificent art and history? A parting word of advice.
I would just encourage them to take a moment in looking at all this beauty and all this art, to have a spiritual response to St. Peter's and to say a prayer. And there's many good places to do that. They can go into the Blessed Sacrament Chapel, which is just reserved for prayer, and have a quiet moment there and pray before the Blessed Sacrament. Or they can visit the body of John the 23rd, which is now under the St. Jerome altar, and, you know, with that body of that blessed Pope, say a prayer at that point. Many people also love to go before the Pietà and just look at the beauty of the Pietà and have a quiet moment, say a prayer there. So I think I would encourage people to do that, have a spiritual response to St. Peter's.
Alan Howard, editor of the website stpetersbasilica.org. That's all one word without punctuation. It's stpetersbasilica.org. as we heard earlier, the Fabrica of St. Peter's is the Vatican office responsible for the maintenance and daily care of the Basilica and its facilities. Well, we caught up with one of their officials on the street outside the Vatican. Cristina Carlostella told us more about the kind of jobs she and her colleagues do, from dealing with visitors to preserving vast archives and mosaics, plus lots more.
Working at the Fabrique, we are about 130 employees. 80 of these are the custodians, the San Pietrini, and they have a very fundamental job. They look after the maintenance, the very important daily maintenance of the basilica. And then we have a very professional staff of architects, conservators, art historians like myself, who actually look after the restoration, preservation, conservation aspect. You can imagine that every single day, we are confronted with major problems of tourist flow, of preservation. This morning there were questions about, can the necropolis be accessible to more people? There is always the problem of preservation. Obviously, we have to be very much aware that we would like to have more people visit, but we always have to keep in mind that this is a heritage, a great responsibility of a heritage which is a world heritage. And being a world heritage site is even a greater responsibility because this site has to remain for future generations to come. We also have a spectacular, really spectacular archive collection that collects more than 50,000 documents, all connected to the construction and the life, the daily life of the Basilica, where we have manuscripts signed by Borromini, Bernini, all the major architects that were involved with the construction of the Basilica. This can be accessible only to researchers and very special permission. Another aspect, of course, is the necropolis, as we said. So we have archaeologists and conservators that look after the preservation of the various mausolea in the necropolis area. We have a mosaic studio, a Vatican mosaic studio. That's part of the Fabrique. Why? Because we know that at the end of the 1500s, there was a decision made precisely for this very important concern to preserve the basilica, to translate all the decorative and pictorial features of the basilica in mosaic form, because mosaics are more durable in time as a technique. So practically all the so-called pictorial surfaces that you see in the basilica were actually executed in mosaic technique. And the Vatican Mosaic Studio is responsible for the restoration of those mosaic surfaces. And at the same time, not only do they look after the conservation, preservation, restoration of those mosaic surfaces, but they are also open to commissions. For years now, actually in the last decades, the recent popes have asked the Vatican Mosaic Studio to execute presents, works that they give out in presence during their pontifical trips. So that is another area that is covered by the Fabrique.
And thanks for joining us. That's all we have time for today. I'm Tracy McClure. Don't forget you can also find us on the web at 105live.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.